ערב שבת שלום, פרשת שופטים. פרשת שופטים contains, among many, many other things, the basic institutions of a Jewish political order. In marked contrast to Christianity, for example, or Eastern religions, Judaism isn't a religion in the narrow sense. It's not just a matter of the relationship between man and God, but rather it is the Torah is the covenant between a people, between an ethnos, which is a covenant which comes to expression not just in the relationship between the individual and God, but also in the relationship between the individual and his fellow Jews, and also in the realization of civilization and a world and a politeia, commonwealth if you want, that is embodies and expresses and instills the will of God as well. So in other words, it's a political system, not in the secular sense, but very much in the sacred sense. One of the striking things about this parsha is that it contains almost all of the major institutions of that Jewish polity, the world, the political system in which we are supposed to live. The only prominent institution which is not extensively discussed here is the temple and the priesthood, to which was devoted almost the entire book of Vayikra, the entire Leviticus, so put that aside, although it will play a role, it will play a role here as well. But we have a discussion of the courts and the court system and the executive branch, which the Torah discusses or assumes will be a monarchy, but we'll see, it's not necessarily, doesn't have to be the case. According to not a few interpreters, not a few commentators, the question of national sovereignty, the role of the will of the people, finds expression in our parsha, and the role of the prophet. We forget. I mean, prophecy is no longer a function in our society. Jewish tradition maintains that the last of the prophets actually ceased to function in the 5th century, the end of the 5th century BCE. The last of the three prophets, lived in the before the end of the 5th century, Haggai, Zechariah, Malachi. Haggai and Zechariah being named, Malachi, some difference of opinion, if that was Ezra, or if it's pseudonym, so it's either Ezra or Mordechai. One of the cute things is that in Italian, when the Italian Jews wanted to give a non-Jewish name or an Italian name to their to a child named Mordechai, they called him Angelo, because based on the tradition that Malach, angel, was in fact Mordechai. All right, that's a sort of a side piece of information. Anyways, and prophets figure in this parsha, and the prophet was a permanent feature of not just Jewish religious life in the first temple, in the beginning of the second temple period, but but also political life. So towards that end, I'd like to to highlight a couple of themes that unite all of these institutions: the courts, the executive, the monarchy, and prophecy, the prophets, as component parts of how we should build our polity. Now, the truth of the matter is that some of it is not 100% relevant or not applicable today, but a lot of it, as we'll see in a minute, I think is. So, point number one is the first thing which the Torah says in this parsha: Shoftim, 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 titen lecha b'chol sharecha, asher Hashem Elokecha noten lecha l'shvatecha, b'shaftu et ha'am mishpat tzedek. You're supposed to set up a system of not just of courts, but also of enforcement, to of vehicles to enforce the courts' rulings. And the courts and these courts should be accessible to everyone. B'chol sharecha, in all of your gates. You know, you're not supposed to have to schlep to the other end of the world to be able to at least get a first instance judgment. Lo tateh mishpat, lo takir panim, lo tikach shochad. Don't take bribes. Judge equitably. Judge wisely. Don't show favoritism. Always pursue justice. And your existence in the land is predicated, is conditioned on being just. This is important to. I'd like to point out that there is a two-sided theme that runs through the entire Torah, and that is that the land of Israel belongs to the Jewish people in perpetuity, because God chose to give it to us. He owns the world, and therefore he gives, as Rashi says at the beginning of the Torah, of his commentary, he gives it to whom he wishes. However, our certificate of occupancy is conditional, and it's conditional upon our moral conduct, as pointed out, that includes sexual conduct and interpersonal conduct, and here the Torah says judicial conduct, and at the end of the book, at the end of Devarim, we'll hear that one of the things that leads to God forbid, exile or expulsion is neglect of the sabbatical year. There's all kinds of things which are which comprise conditions for our certificate of occupancy in the land, which is ours in perpetuity. So, but an equitable system of, not equitable in the sense that everybody gets the same, but a just system of laws is part number one. Later on in the same parsha, we learn that that despite the fact there should be local courts, there should be regional courts, there should also be the high court, which we call the Sanhedrin, which is a later name, and only comes up in the Second Temple time, but that there should be a high court, and all questions of law should be brought there too. Interestingly, in the discussion of the Sanhedrin, or of the Beit Din HaGadol, the great court, which we know it will sit in Jerusalem, we learn two things. Number one is that its mandate to decide questions of halakha is not restricted. It includes civil law and ritual law and temple law. In other words, the Torah is a package. It is integrated it's an integrated whole, and therefore our obligation to it can't be compartmentalized. Number one, and number two, the responsibility of the court is to enforce it all as a totality. In addition, the question arises as to from whence do the courts derive their authority. So what's striking is that you would think that, you know, in fact, the usual answer is how do you appoint judges? Who decides? So according to Jewish tradition, the first person to authorize another judge is Moses. He ordained, laid his hands on Joshua, and Joshua then became a samuch. He became ordained by Moshe Rabbeinu, and all of the chain of Jewish traditions goes from Moses to Joshua. And so we talked about this in the Monday class at the Tel Aviv International Synagogue, the beginning a year and a half ago, when we discussed the first Mishnah in Perkei Avot, that there was a chain of tradition which goes all the way back to Moses, according to Jewish tradition. So in other words, authority comes top down. At the same time, there are areas, and this was something which Rav Soloveitchik, my master and teacher, noted in a lecture that he delivered in the 40s in memory of his father, that the court system is a funny kind of animal. On the one hand, it is it's an elitist institution. where the judges derive their authority from above, from earlier teachers and so on. But there are areas also where the courts derive their authority from the people. I don't have time here to go into it, to get into all the details, but on certain areas of self-governance, the people decide and the people can overturn the Sanhedrin. There are two specific areas which Rav Soloveitchik noted based on an analysis of Maimonides. And one is questions of going to war and peace. Whereas if the, for example, the court decides to go to war and the people say, we don't want to go, so they can overturn the Sanhedrin. And similarly, the same thing is true when it comes to the Jewish calendar. In that case as well, the people rule. So if you take a look at the authority of the judges, you see that it's a mix. It's a mix of the courts are also legislature. I forgot to mention that. They were both representative and they're also authoritative top down. Something similar comes up, interestingly, when we discuss the executive. The Torah assumes, at least that's the straight reading, says, Som tasim alecha melech. You will definitely get around to appointing a king. And most people, when you think about it, assume that Judaism is a monarchic a religion that seeks the reestablishment of a monarchy, of a king. Interestingly, though, in the late 19th century, Rabbi Naftali Tzvi Yehuda Berlin, the Netziv of Volozhin, in his commentary Hamek Davar, observes that it ain't necessarily so, quote, sport in life. He says, really? Is that true? What would happen if people didn't want a king? What would happen if people thought that having a king would be counterproductive? So the Netziv says, he says, you know, matters that are addressed by a king are actually matters that are issues. They're issues of life and death. You know what the rule is? The rule is that in questions of life and death, those considerations of saving people's lives and certainly saving the lives of a country override the technicalities of Jewish law. So says Netziv. Therefore, if the people think that having a king would be counterproductive, would endanger them, or would not allow them to run their lives the best way possible, it is certainly likely that don't need a king. Any other form of executive government would be acceptable halachically, which raises an interesting question. Oh, if that's the case, and this has been, a lot of people have written about this, what is the Jewish legal status of the secular government of the state of Israel? According to the Netziv, it would appear that it's not a totally secular government in the sense that since the people chose to elect prime minister, this or that, then you are not just legally bound to obey its dictates, you are also religiously bound. One of the people who took this even further was the first chief rabbi of the land of Israel, of the state of the land of Israel, who was Ashkenazi chief rabbi to the land of Israel. There were Sephardi chief rabbis for a long time. Rabbi Abraham Isaac Cohen Cook, whose yahrzeit was this past Wednesday. And he says in his responsa on matters of civil law, makes an interesting observation. He says, you know, and by the way, he was a very close student of the Netziv, so I wouldn't be surprised if there was a connection, although I've never checked it out. Says Rav Cook, he says, at the end of the day, the form in which the executive of a Jewish polity takes depends on the people. They derive their authority from their ability to rule, they derive their authority from the government. So therefore any representative institution that would be elected by the people would be halachically binding. So it has religious significance, not just legal significance. In fact, there were those who argue that Rav Kook, he does mention the words Knesset Yisrael in that responsum, so he might have been the first person to call the representative Jewish assembly the Knesset. So that you have here, interestingly, then the executive and the legislative and the judiciary, all three are the government ultimately, to one degree or another, derive their authority from the consent of and from the support of the governed. So there is an idea, we have here an idea of Jewish national sovereignty. The situation with the Sanhedrin is a little bit different because the Jewish people can't decide democratically what the law is. In order to be able to have a right to an opinion as to what the Torah says or what halacha says, there you need education, and you need to pass certain basic moral principles and to have certain basic qualities. And under those circumstances, it's just not about running for election. There you need there is a question of passing a certain bar, and not any Tom, Dick, or Harry can pass that bar. However, as with everything else, it's complicated. At the same time, as there is a very strong element of individual sovereignty, national sovereignty, that the people do decide, it's also true, as I mentioned before, that the people don't get to decide what the law is. They get to pick the forms, but not the content. And that's the other thing that runs through the parsha, and that is that there is no such thing as any arm of government which is under the law. They are over the law, above the law. The king has to have a sacred Torah next to him all the time because he is subject to the Torah as the constitution of the Jewish people. A prophet, his determination of whether a prophet is a real prophet or a false prophet is rendered by whether his demands align with the Torah or not. If a prophet says violate the Torah, then he's a false prophet. Similarly, even the courts. The courts, it's interesting. The courts are the ones you would think are the most, tempted to decide what the law is. We are the ones who interpret it, say if we can do whatever we want. The Sanhedrin sits next to the temple. And the reason the Sanhedrin sits next to the temple is to remind the Sanhedrin that ultimately they are not their own people. They have rules of interpretation. They have rules of procedure, and there are limits on the power, and there are limits on what they can say and when they can say it. Everything at the end of this day is subject to God's dictate, requiring humility, requiring deference, requiring reverence. That's quite, that's when you think about it, that's quite the political system. A political system that's based on reverence and deference and humility. Shabbat Shalom.